This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by PRMI, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So two significant homeless encampments are getting toilets and hand washing stations and trash pickup near Evergreen State College campus in downtown Tacoma, and the other one under I-705. This means these encampments are never going to leave. And I know that that's not necessarily the intent of what the city of Tacoma is doing. That will be the end result. Now, the one in downtown Tacoma has got already about 35 tents there, 34, 35. The one by the 705 has got 52 tents. This is part of a hygiene pilot program from the city of Tacoma. They don't really have any way to address whether or not this is a success, because the city, when they were asked whether or not it was a success, were like, it's a success because people are using it. That's not the metric you should be looking at. That's not the metric. Now, they're going to operate there through at least the middle of July, because homeless people like Christine is mad that she's not being waited on hand and foot.
No charging stations, no bathrooms, no nothing, basically. You know, we're out here fitting for ourselves. Where's everybody going to go to the bathroom at? You know, after, because everything's shut down. Not everybody can go to a business.
But you can't go to a shelter and you're just choosing not to, with all due respect. You're making a choice not to. Allison Griffith is the Assistant Director of Neighborhood and Community Services with the City of Tacoma. And she spoke to Cairo 7 TV. And she says homeless people deserve just some basic hygiene.
This is a basic level of service that every individual in our community deserves.
Again, you can get that at a shelter right now in and around Tacoma. There are shelter space available.
These are basic services for individuals to address their basic human needs.
Okay. You're a hero. Thank you so much, Allison. Hero. Everyone, come on. Hey. Thank you. She's a hero. She's addressing basic human needs while keeping people living out on the streets.
Wait, was that sarcasm?
It was.
See, now can you understand why I didn't clap at
first? Yeah, no, that's fair. I have a problem. Sometimes my sarcasm tone is a little bit too dry.
It's almost a little truthful there, yeah. So
I hear you. This is not the first time they've installed these hygiene stations. They did it at another encampment, and since then, at that encampment, beyond saying it's a success because people are using it, when you actually look at some of the data, turns out not so much a success. Because number one, they don't tell us how many people are still living at that encampment. In fact, they say it hasn't changed, which means people aren't leaving the encampment, which is a problem. But number two, there's been more 911 calls at that encampment. I wonder why. Oh, and according to one council member, residents who live nearby say people are still using the neighborhoods as a toilet. So they're still defecating wherever it is they want, despite the fact that they have access now to these portable toilets. Oh, Cairo 7 reports that some folks are padlocking the toilets. The people, the homeless people, some of them are padlocking it. Okay, sounds like a great idea. This is just so ludicrous. This is just so ludicrous. Oh, hey, how about this? People are still camping out on sidewalks. So they're not even addressing that issue fully. Councilmember Robert Toms wants that addressed.
As we look to bring on two new ones, one of the negotiation points should be, can we put things inside the fence line on the property?
I like this idea of, like, can we? What do you mean, can you? Yes. First of all, the answer is yes, you can. I thought that was a slogan for Obama. Didn't he tell us all? Yes, you can.
He did.
Puede.
For like 6 years.
So much. Well, I mean, it's 2 4-year terms, you dumb.
Yeah, but there was some overlap.
No, that's not how it works.
It does. With sloganing, it's okay. Always around.
I mean, if anything, it's longer.
6 years.
Okay. The council, it would appear, seems skeptical. And yet they're still allowing it to happen. That's on them. That's on them. You are coddling a group of people who are not accepting shelter. And before you know it, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. All you have to do is look at the city of Seattle and look at Miller Park. Miller Park, of course, is attached to Meany Middle School, where you've got a whole bunch of tents there that have been there for a while. The city has made contact now with 30 people, referring them to shelter. 30 people since March 26 being referred to shelter.
You got to keep the kids safe no matter what, and this isn't safe.
Except, according to the city, some of the people will only accept hotels. They're saying no to tiny homes. They're saying no to enhanced shelters. They're saying no to the temporary hotel-based shelters. They're only saying yes to the Executive Hotel Pacific because they have taste and style. And if you don't say that you're going to offer them that specific hotel, they're saying no. They have an expectation that they're in a position that they get to choose. And the truth is, Seattle has taught them that they are. Look at the homeless encampment over at Broadview Thompson K through 8 in Broadview. Seattle Public Schools put out a statement. They said that they're not going to clear that encampment. But what they will do is change the entrance and exit for the students to get onto campus. They're changing the entrance and exit situation. You can only enter and exit through one particular place on campus now because they're refusing to remove the encampment, which is on district property, and the district won't move them.
Well, the encampment was there before the school was ever there, Jason. Of course.
They're living on stolen land.
Exactly.
That's Duwamish land.
Something needs to be
done. They're stealing it again. When you allow this to continue, guess what happens? It continues and continues and continues some more. And it never stops. And before you know it, you've made a bigger problem, bigger than it needs to be, bigger than you want it to be, and you'll never be able to solve it. When we say bad policies of Seattle have a tendency to spread, this is a good example. This is a policy. This is an idea that has come out of Seattle, and now it's in Tacoma. And there are some council members who believe some of these council members, like Councilmember Toms, wants to not have this as a permanent fixture. But he doesn't quite realize that by allowing it right now, it's going to become an inevitable permanent fixture. That's unfortunate. For anyone who lives around this particular area, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Tomorrow, the State House of Representatives might be debating an eighth-order motion to allow the opportunity to vote on an emergency powers reform bill that's going to be brought by the House Republican side of things. We'll see where it ends up going, but it's a little bit confusing for those of us who don't follow all of the inner workings of the procedure, so we thought we would figure it all out with the guy who knows what it is he's talking about. He's the Washington State House Minority Leader, Representative J.T. Wilcox. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me again, Jason.
So immediately some folks sent me a text yesterday saying, what's an eighth order motion for emergency powers reform? What, huh? Explain what's going on tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow, because we are past deadlines and because the speaker will not bring these bills to the floor, we are offering a motion that requires just a simple majority of the legislature to immediately consider a bill. And if the Democrats vote as a bloc, they will defeat the motion and we will never be able to vote on this. If nine Democrats join 41 Republicans, then we will be able to consider a very moderate bill that should not be offensive to anyone in either party that says every 60 days the governor has to check back with the legislature in order to maintain his emergency declaration.
Now, this obviously comes as the governor unilaterally decided to move three counties back into phase number two. There's a threat that other counties will also follow that kind of fate. Obviously, the timing of this is incredibly important. Do you have the necessary Democrats to move this forward?
I don't have any guarantees at this point, and I have members that are very interested in this, and I've told them, go out and find a Democrat. And I've told people in Pierce County that are deeply concerned about this. There are a number of Democrats that represent Pierce County. You should be talking to them, and they're the ones that are going to decide whether or not this is successful. We just need nine.
Who should we be talking to? Who should the folks who are listening right now call or email respectfully to say, hey, you should at least vote yes so we can move this along and have the conversation?
Yeah, and I would agree. We're trying to ask people to do something for us. And so if you do it respectfully, you're more likely to have success. And I would say any representative that represents parts of Pierce County, so the 30th District, the 28th District, the 29th District, the 27th District, I can't remember if I said the 28th, and it's really easy to find the contact information. You go to, all you really have to do is Google Washington State House, and you can navigate to contact every single person there.
So do you realistically think that someone like Jesse Johnson, who represents the 30th, he is pretty far to the left. Do you think that you're going to be able to get folks who are far to the left to turn on the governor? Because obviously the governor doesn't want this to happen.
Yeah, you know, I think the odds are not high. However, a similar effort was successful a few years ago in the Senate, and it resulted in a coalition caucus that was successful for quite some time. And I would also say I've been talking about this issue since the very first press availability of the session, way back in early in January. And it was frustrating because people were not very interested. I would say in the last 2 weeks, you've seen an awful lot of press interest, a lot of editorial board interest, and more interest from everyday citizens. So the timing is good. And as you probably know, timing sometimes is a lot more important than substance.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. What do you think is going to be the reaction from generally the Democrats who represent Pierce County in particular? Obviously, when you're looking into Cowlitz and you're looking into Whitman, you're dealing more with Republicans. But, you know, Pierce County is a purple district.
Well, I am hoping that they'll be very receptive. And, you know, I would like to win this procedural motion. Then I'd like to bring the bill to the floor and pass it, because the truth is, you know, the legislation around emergency powers goes back to the 80s, some of it. And it was never stress tested. And it makes perfect sense that now that we've had a year of this, we can adjust things. And almost every other state in the United States has adjusted emergency powers, except for the state of Washington. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, it's silly, I think, to stubbornly insist that it's perfect and we should continue to go on without having the fully active three equal branches of government.
That is, however, isn't that one of the downsides of having a part-time legislature?
Well, it might be a downside.
Right. I mean, because a lot of this, if we had a full-time legislature, this whole conversation feels like would be a little bit different.
Well, it might be, but I see plenty of downsides in having the legislature in session 52 weeks out of the year, and I bet you can, too.
Well, certainly a lot more BS we'd have to deal with, but I don't know. It feels like you'd have a little bit more leverage at this point, because it seems like, what is the response then from Democrats who will say, look, we are in a part-time legislature, we're not in session past a few months of the year, the governor should, you know, he's the leader during the rest of the time. Why shouldn't he have that kind of power?
Well, because we have never had experienced this situation in the past where an emergency goes on without really any defined end. Yeah. And, you know, we're finding novel ways to say that it's an emergency every week. almost. And so this is something that we haven't experienced before. And by the way, I'm not asking, and the bill wouldn't require that we stay in session because our rules now allow for a remote session every 2 months. We could have an hour-long session where the majority gets to vote whether or not to extend the emergency, and everyone would be on the record that way.
Do you think we're still in an emergency?
Go ahead. I think it's a very different emergency, and I think it would be perfectly appropriate for the House and Senate to set the rules rather than depending on the governor to do it as he is now.
Yeah, it's so ludicrous. what are you hearing from the Democrats? Behind the scenes, what are you hearing from the Democrats as they resist this?
There is a small number that are talking to our members that I think share our feelings. And if you look at some recent votes, you'll find some Democrats that have voted with us. And in fact, I believe we've got two Democrats that are co-sponsors of the bill that we're talking about, Representative Paul and Representative Chapman. And I would hope that they would vote for the motion as well. But when I talk to leadership on the Democratic side, they tell me, well, if there's a catastrophe of some kind, we can call ourselves back into session. And I'm a little surprised, honestly, because I think when I first came to the legislature 10 years ago, there was a much more robust understanding that Republican or Democrat, it's our responsibility to stand up for our branch. Because if we don't, it becomes less and less important. And that's not the way we think our government works. And in this case, it just seems like there is no sense of urgency to maintain the influence of the legislature.
Yeah, and you know, I'll say this to folks who are wondering how they can get involved beyond just reaching out to their state representative. Also, reach out to your county council member, who is likely a Democrat, who can also get in the ears of the representatives and put some pressure that way. I mean, we got to go all in on this. And right now, at least in Pierce County, a lot of Democrats are upset with the direction that the governor just took them in. And this does seem like a very reasonable ask coming from the Republicans in Olympia. Can we get 9 state representatives who are Democrats to go along with this? I don't know. Doesn't only have to be in Pierce County, by the way. There are plenty of moderate Democrats who are serving right now that we can get in the ears of. So make sure if you are listening and you are represented by a Democrat, just give one phone call, send one email, be polite, be civil, but make sure that you know that they can be influenced. You just got to make sure that you're putting in the time. We've been talking with the House Minority Leader, Representative J.T. Wilcox. Thank you so much. Best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you. I appreciate you helping us get the message out, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the time of the show where we completely ignore the city of Seattle because the media already hyper-focused on the stories coming out of Seattle. Instead, we focus all of our attention on you, the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Shoreline, where there was a fire. A fire that allowed 4 King County Sheriff's deputies to show us exactly why they signed up for this job. In fact, they're being called heroes because they ran into a burning apartment building and helped a whole bunch of people get out alive. They ended up getting injured in the process. They're going to be okay, thankfully, but ACAB, right? Defund the police, am I right? Come on!
Why would you say that in a time where they're being heroic?
No, we got to defund them. You know what they say about cops? They're all the same. They're all the, you know. Fire breaks out last night around 11:30 at the Highlands apartment. Will Hoffman is someone who lives in this apartment. He spoke with Como TV about what it was like on the inside.
And the flames was all the way up to the second floor on the other side of the building. And then it just went whoosh all the way up to the fourth floor. And then, yeah, that's what happened. and then it was just chaos.
It went yoosh, and it was chaos. And it turns out that there were four deputies nearby. So they went to this apartment complex. They ran in. They rescued a bunch of people. They suffered smoke inhalation. They were taken to Harborview Medical Center. They are going to be okay. They're heroes. Fire department hates them, though. They're all like, excuse me, that's our job. We don't run in to a shooting and try to go after the bad guy. I'm kidding. We need to start doing a better job, I think, in general, of telling these stories. We do them when we see them, right? We do them when we can. But all too often, media outlets don't cover stories in this way or frame them in this way. Officers do a hell of a job helping people. But that's not really news because that's what they're supposed to do. When an officer does something bad or it can be framed in that way, the news is really hyper-focused on it. And that's to the detriment of law enforcement in general. It creates really bad relationships. We're told that deputies, law enforcement in general, they're just all racist. Trevor Noah had a tearful video on Twitter wondering where are all the good apples. There are no good apples. The tree is rotten. Yeah, we got it, Trevor Noah, who of course isn't going to give up any of his security when he's hosting the Grammys. When he hosts his Comedy Central. Trevor Noah, best known as that guy who's... He's still the host of Comedy... That Daily Show? Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That's still on, right? Oh, okay. It must be. He's trending on Twitter because of a video. Okay. Is he funny, though, still? Was he ever? But he's funnier than Seth Meyers, though, right? Oh, no, but no one finds Seth Meyers funny. Got it. Are you missing anything? Are you light about 400 pounds worth of meth?
Did you say meth?
Yeah.
Like crank?
Is that what meth is?
Chalk?
Is that what meth is?
Cookies? Scooby snacks?
Well, you're definitely not light on cookies. I know that.
White Cross? Cotton candy? Christina? Rocket fuel?
Is that all meth?
Yeah, that's all meth. What do you think I'm talking about?
Are you light? 400 pounds?
I mean, I would never go on the radio and say I would light 400 pounds if I
how
mean...
About, how about this? How about this? Are you missing seven duffel bags?
You know what? Weirdly enough, I am. That's not
seven?
That's not a crime, right? Seven duffel bags? That's not a crime? It's like when you get to like nine, that's a crime to be missing. To even have possession of seven duffel bags or nine duffel bags.
I mean, it is weird to have that many duffel bags. Unless, I guess, you're a coach.
I like bags. Good sales, you know.
Okay. So, more than 400 pounds of meth were found in a bunch of duffel bags near a beach in Port Angeles, according to the Clallam County Sheriff's Office.
Port Angeles, you say?
Yeah. They were turned in by a resident. Who was really, really hyper when he turned it in. It was very weird. You'll never believe what I found on the beach. You'll never believe what I found on the beach.
I'm telling you, there was like nine duffel bags. He only turned in seven?
The first call came in early on April 7th, or at some point on April 7th. And they had found a bag of 60 pounds of meth and what they thought was about 2 pounds of cocaine. But then another call came in. Seven bags found with, quote, wrapped containers of a crystal substance believed was drugs near the beach. Turns out it was filled with 342 pounds of meth. So actually it was 8 pounds, eight bags, eight duffel bags. 1 pound of meth, just for your information. How much do you think a pound of meth is worth? I was shocked. And the variation, the amount between the range is kind of high to me.
I don't know. I feel like you don't need a lot of meth to get high, so a pound is probably a good chunk of money. Maybe like $1,000 for 1 pound?
No.
No?
You're very low.
Am I?
You're really low.
Like $5,000?
$7,000 on the low end, $13,000 on the high.
Wow.
Which I don't know why there's such a differentiation between, like, why is there such a...
Supply and demand.
But 7 to 13, that's a lot. That's a big range.
Do you think business people are the ones who are buying meth? Or do you think ones who can be convinced to spend $13,000?
It's not, you're obviously not buying a pound of meth, you dummy.
Obviously someone is. No. They had to get the pound somewhere.
You're not buying a full pound!
Why not? It's like Costco, right?
Okay, no, it's not like Costco.
You don't just buy it by the pallet?
I don't think that's how it works.
Why are you such an expert over there on this wash?
Because
the trash.
I am a learned individual.
Yeah? Do you get geared up?
What does that mean?
Chicken flipping on the weekends? Is that what you're doing?
I had chicken last... Yes.
So you were chicken flipping. Maybe
this
was your meth.
Flipped, yes, but it was dead.
What about zooming? Are you zooming on the weekends?
I had a Zoom call the other day, yes.
So you are zooming, you're chicken flipping.
Not at the same time.
You ever spun out?
I don't drive, but one time I did.
This is a little fishy, Jason.
I don't do that.
No fish?
No fish. Mm. They don't know where it came from. I'm assuming they don't tell me if it was damaged. I'm assuming it fell off of a boat, right?
Port Angeles, I mean, I guess that was the bag wet? That might indicate
they didn't say.
It fell
I mean,
off
we
of
don't know
boat.
How long it was out on the beach. We have no idea. It didn't say any of that.
Yeah, I don't know who's just leaving 8 duffel bags worth of meth on a beach. That seems like a bad place to, you know, stash it. Oh, what do you always say? You know, the personal carry thing. They stash their stuff around the corner. That guy was just a few blocks away, so he wouldn't get arrested.
Is it possible that it's obviously a dude?
Is it?
I mean, I think so.
That's a little sexist.
Is it possible that the dude gets home after whatever... You know, the drug dealer's day is like. It's like, oh, honey, today was a crazy day. I sold so much product, but not enough. I'm going to have to go back out tomorrow and sell even more. Oh, my God. Oh, no. Honey, what is it? What's going on? Oh, my God. No. Honey, what's wrong? What do you think the conversation was when he realized he left 8 duffel bags full of meth on a... How did it get there? It had to have fallen off a boat.
Has to have.
Right?
Nobody misplaces
there's no other way.
8 duffel
well,
bags on their own.
There's no reason why people would just bring it to a beach.
You've never enjoyed a sunset and, you know, some Scooby snacks?
Is that what it's called?
That's one of my slang terms that I found on this... Let's see, the AmericanAddictionCenter.org. It's a .org. They just really want to get the information out there. Not for profit.
I don't even know which one meth is. I mean, I know what meth is. Oh, I'll tell you a story since we're short on time. And we're about to talk drugs with our friend, Mill Creek Council member Vincent Cavallari. I was on the bus today. And I sat in the back of the bus where I thought it was empty. It was not. And there were definitely two people there. Who were definitely what I thought passed out. I did see a piece of tinfoil. Turns out they were not passed out. They were smoking what I believe to be heroin. Someone here told me it's possible it was crack, but I think tinfoil is heroin or meth. I don't know. But a big puff of smoke came out, and I'm telling you, for a good 5 hours, I thought I might have... had a contact high. I was telling myself, I think I'm high. Because I was so close. And I don't know how that works, but it is smoke, right? They inhaled it. They got high.
Even if you were contact high, just enjoy it. That stuff's expensive, and you just got a little taste for free.
Something tells me the people on the bus were not enjoying expensive product. 1-800-465-8770. Seattle is thriving, by the way, so if you want to send me a text. Whoa. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Another city has decided to fix the problem that was created by the Supreme Court's decision to rule a felony drug possession law unconstitutional. And as the state legislature is trying to figure out how they're going to address it, it looks like they'll address it by essentially legalizing drugs. The city of Mill Creek stepped in, thanks to Councilmember Vince Cavallari, who joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Jason. Nice to be here.
So take us through the legislation that you passed this week.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that intro. I also want to give maybe a shout out to some of our sister cities and agencies that maybe took the lead ahead of time. Mayor Nearing in Marysville and Lily Stevens as well, that passed ordinances to recriminalize it. It seems silly to almost say to recriminalize drugs in their community. The State v. Blake decision really handcuffed, you know, our local law enforcement and our ability to intervene and really to decide what our community looks like. I mean, I have a lot more to say on the issue because I think the Supreme Court in our state has really stepped over the line or stepped out of its respective lane and is really kind of deciding to legislate from the bench.
Oh, absolutely. I think any reasonable reading of their logic would give off that impression. The idea that assuming someone who is found to have an illicit substance on their person and say it is unreasonable to assume they knew that they had a dime bag on them is so ludicrous to me. They wanted to legalize drugs, and so they took advantage of a case that was, you know, making its way through the court in Spokane. They didn't need to rule the entire law unconstitutional. They made that choice. So it's my understanding, though, that in your move to recriminalize drug use, and these are misdemeanors, not everyone was on board.
No, it was a simple majority in the council, four votes to get it passed. It was actually written originally as an emergency ordinance, which would have required a supermajority, but I had that language pulled out because the original introduction of this language was an emergency, and at this point, 3 weeks later, it was not an emergency ordinance. So it did pass, thankfully, and let me just, to your point about the judges, all you have to do is look at their summary brief, where they decide to call, we'll just say Blake. I'm not going to Mr. or Mrs. Innocent conduct, right? Innocent conduct is how they describe having meth or heroin in your front pockets. It's considered innocent conduct by the majority of the Supreme Court. There's nothing innocent about a pocket full of fentanyl. Nothing innocent about a pocket full of methamphetamine or heroin. Mm-hmm. These are the wars every day. The only thing this does is interfere the opportunity to have that interaction or intervention with these individuals who are suffering through addiction. So law enforcement is essentially the tip of the spear when it comes to these things. No one all of a sudden decides one day, in very rare cases, I'm sure it happens, that they want to get help for their addiction. They look to stay addicted. It takes an opportunity. It takes a prodding. It takes an intervention. You know, this is the case where we have a role to play, and the Supreme Court, which is really disappointingly, right? The Supreme Court is supposed to be that independent judiciary, right? The final tribunal, if you will, in our state, and here they are looking to create laws.
Why did you not get a full council on board?
You know, that's a good question. To be honest, to be even more candid, I figured this was all we were. We didn't reinvent the wheel. This is just trying to close a loophole that the court created. All we were looking to do is to get back to where we were a month ago, right? So there
Well, to
were,
a point, right? I mean, you're just going, you're not going back to where we were a month ago because it's not a felony. It's misdemeanor possession.
Correct. And I think I'm using the intervention point, the opportunity to have this dialogue.
Yeah, my point is it's not even as you know, quote unquote, bad as it was before. It's not even as restrictive.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And look, and what's the first thing the governor does? I don't know if you saw his press release yesterday. He just commuted the sentence of anybody in prison right now being held on drug charges.
Yep.
And the public really doesn't understand that, because nobody goes to prison for having a little bit of drugs in their pocket. That just doesn't happen. Maybe if they have 10 priors of mm-hmm. having drugs in their pocket, along with other crimes. Our state is based on a criminal point system. So the whole thing is just absolutely dishonest all the way around. And the fact that we couldn't get all seven members on board is disappointing. I mean, I assume that this is one of those things, when I drafted the legislation, they would have hoisted me up on their shoulders and carried me across the finish line. But it was contentious, to say the least.
Why was it contentious? What did they say?
I believe other council members, their goal was to hopefully wait for the state to act or somebody else to do something. That's their answers. The recording, the audio recordings are there online for people to hear and see. You know, it's again, I don't want to bash council. Everybody has an independent right to vote
sure.
the way they vote. And I respect that, but it's not how I see things. And it's not how the majority of the citizens in Mill Creek see things either.
What's your biggest fear had you not made this move and just waited for the state? Because obviously, you know, today's a big part of all of this in how they're going to rule and move forward. I mean, the state seems ready to just legalize. So should you not have waited and crafted language after this? I mean, they might just eventually just take away the rights of a city to craft their own policy.
You nailed it, right? Isn't that the slippery slope? The axioms of violence begets more violence, ignoring bad behavior encourages more bad behavior. What do you think is going to happen when you turn a blind eye to things like this, right? Just look to the south. I mean, you're in Seattle. Just look down in Portland. That's permissiveness run amok. You decide that certain things are acceptable. You take away the autonomy of the city to safeguard and caretake for itself, and you have anarchy. It's as simple as that. So waiting is not an option. I people didn't elect me to do that. They don't pay me a salary to do that, and it's honestly not how I roll.
Well, I'm glad you decided to step up. It's important that people step up, especially on something so important. And, you know, you're here talking as a council member, but, you know, you and I both know what you do for a full-time job, which is you're a deputy within the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office. And so you see this kind of stuff on a regular basis, the impact that drugs have on communities. And so I'm glad that you're looking out for the city of Mill Creek in your position as council member. Vince Cavallari, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, really appreciate it.
We appreciate you, Jason. Thanks and God bless.
Thank you. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text message, you're listening to The Jason Rancho. Back with more at the top of the hour.